The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Show over the next while, Dan McDonald will join us a little later to recap on yesterday at the Oireachtas Committee and any of the new developments today. There was a very strong statement from the PFAI. We're going to chat to Rob Daly as well about the Bundesliga and the row this afternoon between Kingsley Coman and Robert Lewandowski, that after Bayern beat Dortmund 5-0 last weekend. But tomorrow night's going to be a big night in Dublin, because there's a huge event taking place for the Sean Cox Foundation. They've raised a remarkable amount of money over the last year or so to help Sean in his rehabilitation after that horrible attack outside Anfield. Tomorrow's one of the biggest events, though. Over 30,000 tickets sold already for the game between Liverpool legends and the Republic of Ireland legends. You can still get your tickets as well. Just go to ticketmaster.ie/LFC. But a host of Liverpool legends are in town. I was down at the team hotel earlier today. Kenny Dalglish was just sitting in the corner. Phil Babb was there. And Ian Rush was there as well. And I caught up with him. Here's how it went.
Well, proper Liverpool legend. Ian Rush is one of the many Liverpool legends who are in town for tomorrow night's big game. So many great Irish players, so many great former Liverpool players, all for such an incredible cause. It seems as though it's setting up for a pretty special night.
Yeah, it's going to be a great night. You know, any Legends game that you play in, it's always great. But we've got legends from Liverpool and Republic of Ireland, and it's going to be fantastic. But as you say, it's for one great cause, and you know, it's going to be absolutely amazing. So hopefully everyone can get along there, you know, and support Sean as well.
You've met Sean's wife, Martina. You've met the family. So you've got a good sense of what they're going through and the battle that they're facing.
Yeah, I think sometimes that goes unnoticed. Every time I met her, you know, she's very positive. You know, she's so strong and everything and all that. But, you know, it must be difficult for her because she's there morning, noon and night by his side, yeah. And all that. And
it's weirdly the piece people don't talk about, that there is a minute by minute, hour by hour part of this that they have to somehow get through.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And you know, if I'm sure if she wasn't like that, no, Sean wouldn't be in the position he is today. Mm. Because she's given him the strength, saying, listen, you can do it. And yes, Sean's got to do it himself, but he needs that support. Now, we're here to support as playing a game, and as a player, and that's the easy thing for us. You know, the hardest thing is his family and everyone in the Sean Cox Foundation, everyone, they're the hard work that goes on behind the scenes. You know, but it's great when you see the hard work behind the scenes. To see that, what I seen this morning of Sean, you know, what he posted up today, that was absolutely amazing. And that's going to give all the players a massive lift and all that. It just goes to show with all the hard work, you know, where good things can happen.
Maybe we shouldn't be surprised, but it is a pretty remarkable thing what football supporters, Liverpool, Irish, I think football supporters in general, have done over the past year. The way they've come together, the sense it could have been anybody as to what happened, Sean Cox. The level of fundraising has been pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. And like you said there, you know, Liverpool, we do see ourselves as a special club. You know, we see ourselves as one big family club. And if a family member gets hurt, you have to help them. You know, but I'd like to see if it'd been any other club, no, any other supporter, no, any other club, but I would hope that they'd do the same, because, you know, I'd like to see the people at the game tomorrow, not just Liverpool supporters. I'd like to see every supporter come and support it, because it could happen at their club and all that, and hopefully that club, they would sort of help out as well.
Kenny Dalglish is over to manage the side as well. Are you in his ear? I'm starting, boss.
Not at the moment, because I just had a knee operation. So I had a knee operation a couple of weeks ago. So I'll be managing with Kenny. But I don't know. I'm hoping to see when the physios come in, I can run. But it's turning, and that's the problem. So it's like having a fitness test.
It's like a spot kick. Maybe you can run on and take that.
It's like having a fitness test. Really, I don't know if I'm going to play. You've got to see the physio. But yeah. I was at the Legends game a couple of weeks ago, and I couldn't play in that. So I managed with Kenny, the team and all that, and it's nothing worse than, and you've been there, you want to get on the pitch, yeah. And I was it's great managing with Kenny and all that there, but you want to try and get out on that pitch, and the best thing is playing, and the second best thing is managing. So I did get a bit frustrated actually, because I couldn't get on the pitch and all that, but maybe I'll notice tomorrow whether I can do or not. But no, I think it's like I said, everything. I've not played at the Aviva. I played at Lansdowne, you know. So at least you can say, I played at the Aviva, you know, all that. But
something.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, to me, I want to play everyone because they're all updated now, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're all on the pitches are perfect.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what it all comes down to. You walk on the pitch. I walked on Anfield 2 weeks ago. I was thinking, God, I'd love to play on this pitch. It's like there's carpet and all that, and the Aviva would be fantastic as well. So we'll know a bit more in the morning.
Yeah, Sunday will be a big day at Anfield as well. Possibly Liverpool's biggest game since 5 years ago in that match against Chelsea and Steven Gerrard slipping all that. Yeah. How do you compare this team with that team and maybe even the Rafa Benitez team of 09, the other teams that have contended?
Yeah, teams have got close, but I think this team is maybe a little bit closer. You can add that. I don't think Chelsea are as strong as they were when they stopped us winning the league. They've got one massive player, Hazard, who's is absolutely unbelievable. He's a massive danger to us and all that. But I just feel there's a sense where I think the players now think they can win the league. You know, I think maybe about a month or so where you're thinking, oh, maybe we can, maybe we can't. But I think now they must be thinking they can win the league. And people say to me, are Liverpool going to win the league? And I say, why not? Well, they're top of the league, so why can't they? So I think the game against Southampton was unbelievable for me because they went from 1-0 down and to win 3-1. To play Southampton away, it's no easy game at all. No easy game.
And for Mo Salah to get the goal as well, having had that barren run, like as a striker, you'll have had those spells where you're rushing it. Like there was a sense that he'd become a little bit greedy at times, that he was just trying that little bit too hard. Yeah. Was that your sense watching him? And was that the first time you'd really seen that? And what do you do? Like, is there anyone that, often wonder in that situation, like, can a coach help you? Can anyone help you? Or is it all in your own head?
It's in your own head, I think. You know, I went through the same, and that's what you do. You got to you try too hard, you try to be too precise and everything, where you should be doing things just natural. Mm. So for me, I had my advice from Bob Paisley was to get greedy. You know, he said, if you're not going, you get greedy. And, you know, I think that's the same with Mo. You know, I think it's to be greedy and all that. And weirdly enough, every time when he scored that goal, just before he scored the goal, I was shouting to pass. You know, I think shouting pass, but it was absolutely, he caught the keeper out, he took it early, caught the keeper out. And I think his reaction after that just goes to show, yeah, I'm back now. And that could be the decisive thing to win the league. With Mo coming back on Song and everything, hopefully he can make the difference.
If Liverpool do go on and win the league, it'll probably be because of the change at the other end, that they'll win it because of how strong they become defensively, and particularly the addition of Virgil van Dijk. I'm always surprised in the way when I hear your vintage, that great Liverpool player is talking about van Dijk and comparing him with Alan Hansen and comparing him favourably. Like, would you go along with that?
Yes, 100%. I think he's a fantastic player. He's, for me, he's most probably player of the year at Liverpool. And if we win the league, you know, normally you get a striker getting player of the year and all that, but you've got a defender, and he's been absolutely amazing. Not just there, but his presence, his organisation, you know, I think he's been absolutely fantastic, his organisation and all that. I just believe, you know, he is a massive difference and all that. But I think last year or the year before, we were scoring goals but letting goals in. This year we're scoring goals but we're not letting goals in. And as you said, that is a major factor that Liverpool are in the position that they're in now.
It seems as though they've got over the questions about the Anfield atmosphere, as to whether it was suffocating. Obviously their record at Anfield in the last couple of years is incredible, 2 years since the defeat. What's your sense on that? Can it be too much at times? That there's the odd stray pass and the entire, there's such an air of expectancy. Like, do you think the players, that can play a negative factor as much as a positive one?
I think maybe 2 months ago people think that, but now they don't. I think because even when they go a goal behind, as they've proven now, they can come from a goal behind and win. So I think the fans don't get as worried as what they were maybe 2-3 weeks ago, 3 months ago, were weirdly enough. But I think, well, these players have got it. If we go a goal behind, these can pull it back, you know. And I think there's the supporters, they're like the 12th man at Anfield anyway, you know. But there's great belief there. Okay, if we go a goal down, we're going to come back and win. And supporters get behind them, where if you went a goal down maybe 2-3 months ago, people may be sighing then, oh, it's the same again. But now that they believe in that, and the players are reacting to that as well, because supporters can only do so much what they see on the field, and the players are reacting now. They go down, they try that bit hardest to keep on, and supporters realise, oh yeah, they're playing now, and they get behind the team again. And I think that could be a major factor, especially at home.
I was going to say fair play for coming over, but this is sure home from home for you at this stage, isn't it?
Yeah, come here quite a lot and all that. So it's Ireland. I'm just like being in Liverpool anyway, you know, because there's a lot of Liverpool people here and a lot of Irish in Liverpool. So it is home from home, yeah.
Enjoy tomorrow night.
Thanks.
Yeah, so that was Ian Rush among amongst a host of Liverpool and Republic of Ireland legends who will be on the pitch at the Aviva Stadium tomorrow evening, including Kevin Kilbane. Dan McDonald has joined me in studio.
I am here, yeah. I mean, would it go better than Parky Keeve, do you think?
Oh, there was a lot of moaning about his back being a bit sore. I think I wouldn't be surprised
I haven't looked at the full squad list, actually, in detail.
There's a lot of the younger lads. Keith Andrews is playing.
Oh, yeah.
Keith will do the running.
Yeah.
So I think Kev will be, I think he'd be somewhat ineffective.
I mean, you've decided that already. Yeah.
But I just worry for his back. Like, he's injured. He's injured all the time.
Yeah, you can shuffle around the park and be effective, you know? I think it'd be very harsh, Nathan.
Okay.
Maybe you're just ringing. Maybe you're just hurting from recent reviews of your own football.
Well, exactly, from Kilbane. So now is my chance for revenge tomorrow night.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
On legal advice, I'm precluded from making any further comments at this hearing in relation to the finances of the association or my former role as CEO or the 100,000 payment, either directly or indirectly. I am not in a position to answer any such questions here at this time.
Like, what was the terms of credit in relation to that specific bill? Anybody know?
I can't answer the issue of that creditor on what the terms
but like,
of
that's
were.
What we're here for. Like, I mean, literally all the questions are about.
You're being portrayed as the Trump of FUI. Like, you have the grassroots support behind you, but obviously someone inside Dublin is out for your league and maybe certain parts of the media.
Lads, how many of your board members? Why a loan of €100,000 was not included in the monthly financial accounts?
If I'm given time, I'll establish that exactly for you.
How much time do you need?
You will be most welcome to Kerry. You will get what I would call the mother of all welcomes when you come to Kerry, because your reputation and your respectability will precede you down the road before you land.
People making statements for 3 minutes those of us actually on the committee have to stop with our questions.
He's a member of the House. He's been sitting here.
It's a statement, though.
I think, look, come here.
And I would have thought that anybody would have been glad to be handed the opportunity to put the record straight. But you haven't taken up that opportunity, Mr. Delaney.
I know what your comments.
Is there a reason why you haven't?
No, I know what your comments have been, Mr.
But is there a reason you haven't?
No, I've read my statement, as you know.
It would appear Mr. Delaney, like he's here physically, so he's covered himself in that way, but it's Hamlet without the prince because he hasn't answered any of the questions that people outside of this room would have wanted to be answered.
Words are very unnecessary. They can only do harm.
Fine work of Richie McCormack.
He said yesterday that there wouldn't be a Healy Ray in his montage.
Did you ever think you'd be doing a montage spoofology, in a Oireachtas committee?
Spoofology from Richie there. Spoofology claiming that there would be no Healy Ray on it. There was a Healy Ray there, as far as I heard.
There was a little twist in the montage.
Yeah.
Suddenly came out of nowhere.
Here we go. You know, let's go for a dramatic key and tune change.
So Dan McDonald has joined us in studio.
I have.
He was late, which lends me to believe there might be developments.
It's
tell us. You've got to buy your pendant tomorrow morning.
You always have to do that. What's happened today? It's rumbling along. I mean, I briefly heard about it in news round earlier, and there was a sense that nothing's happened today. I mean, nothing has happened in the sense of, I don't know what people expect to happen, but there's I think it would be wrong to say that nothing has happened today either. Do you know what I mean? In the sense that, like, sponsors have been moved to put out statements. We've had a really strong statement from the PFA Ireland, the PFAI there, the Players' Union, in the last couple of hours, building on the Hamlet theme there by referring to being something rotten in the state of the FAI. And I think the significant statement about that, it's come from the management committee, it's come from players, it's come from, you know, from Gary Rogers, from Ronnie O'Gorman, from Brendan Clark, Luke Byrne, Shane Supple, you know, people sort of, you know, it's not maybe people involved in the PFI have had rows with the FAI, that's well known.
Sure, yeah, that seemed the most notable part. That there was
this friction there. I think, to be fair, it's well known as enmity, but, you know, for players to put their name to it, I think that's probably substantial. And then we've had other comments, as I said, three been forced to move, or not forced, they feel like they have to put out something. And the kit sponsors, you know, the New Balance, the top line and Jack and the various entities in Irish football. Everyone needs to react now. You know, this is something that everyone that has a relationship with the FAI is now coming under scrutiny, whatever it may be, whether they play, whether they're an affiliate, whether they're a delegate, whether they're a board member, whether they're a partner. You know, so everyone that has that relationship has to almost, it's almost like those who haven't. Their silence is deafening, and I mean, we've spoken about it here before. There have been positive statements from clubs who, you know, around the country who remain backers, although we haven't had too many of them since Wednesday. That's not to say their mood has changed, but maybe they haven't just come out yet and done so. But it feels like, you know, the next Tuesday is the next date, obviously, where Sport Ireland and Shane Ross, that's the next date in the diary.
Right, so talk us through that then, because as you say, people are wondering what next.
Yeah.
And the FAI walked out of the Oireachtas committee tomorrow, and whether they sail off into the sunset and they progress with their various reports and they implement what they implement and we all move on with life and we wait and see who the new CEO is going to be to work alongside.
Yeah, yeah.
John Delaney. You mentioned the statements from sponsors. They essentially said, we're keeping an eye on the situation and we're waiting to see what happens with the report.
Yeah.
What's next? Barring, it seems as though this has gone past the stage of staying up late on Saturday night to see what is on the front page of the Sunday Independent and the Sunday Times in terms of revelations, that this now is boiling down to straight facts between Sport Ireland and the FAI and the committees.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, there's always scope for more information to come out to maybe fill any gaps that might be there. But at the same time, what I feel now anyway is that the level to which this has gone, that there's no way that the current status quo will remain, you know, everyone involved will remain. I mean, I think that has sort of been acknowledged anyway by some of the reviews and so on. But I mean, in the sense that I'm not even sure if we'll get to next Tuesday with everyone involved still in place in their position, or without having maybe made public comments with regard to their position. And when I say that, I mean, you know, from the FAI perspective. Now, I'm not
from the various board members.
I'm not saying what that statement will be about their position, but will they get to next Tuesday and a scenario where Sport Ireland and Shane Ross are in the room and there's no update, there's no further correspondence, there's no further guarantees, there's no further commitments of some kind? I'd be fairly shocked if we got to that stage, to be honest. You know, I think the pace of movement in terms of how people have reacted, I think it demands that. I've felt for a couple of weeks that this one isn't going away, and I probably still have that belief. That's without making any confident predictions of maybe a bottom line scenario that maybe some people would want. I just think that the scale of this is such that I personally would be of the opinion that I couldn't see the Sport Ireland funding being restored without
significant changes.
As much as they can't demand changes, they do hold the power to withhold the funds. I mean, I suppose August is when the next tranche of funding is due. That's a long-term timeline. I mean, in the short term, the FAI have to, I keep going back to this, the FAI have to appoint a new CEO, which is a big appointment. At the moment, they can't do that. I mean, ultimately, they just couldn't. You know, they can't go through that process when this is going on. I know they've spoken about having various people on the panel, but at the moment they're talking about offering Sport Ireland and the government a place in the panel. You can't have a Sport Ireland representative in the panel when they're not even given funding.
Well, you'd wonder, how many different reviews are going to have to be finished before they can appoint a CEO? Because there's obviously the Graham Thornton review. They're still at the stage of terms of reference for the Mazars review. There's also this extra governance review, yet another review of the governing structures that Sport Ireland may well have somebody on that, and there could be several external. So what does that change the role of the board to be? What does that change the role of the CEO? Will the CEO now be back on the board? So
what is the position
of CEO? What's it going to entail when they finally come around to someone?
Yeah, no, very much so. I suppose if they stick with the Jonathan Hall review as their template for that element of senior management, then they wouldn't be on the board, the CEO. But that's neither here nor there. I don't know where they find a panel and all the various constituent parts of a recruitment process from at this stage. And also, you'd have to say at the moment that you might miss out on the best candidates with this uncertainty, because there are certain people I don't think who would go for it at the moment. Why would you? Okay, it's going to be a well-paid job, so people will go for it. I don't think you'd say no one's going to go for it. That's not true.
Could you find yourself in a situation a month into the job, you're somehow back in front of a dull committee having to explain things that went on for the previous decade?
Absolutely. Any CEO that's appointed if a CEO was appointed in May with no changes, they're starting off to use it. They're 3-0 down from the start. You know, so that's not an attractive scenario, and that's not a healthy position to put a new appointment in, to be fair. Mm. You know, that's not. So, I mean, we have reached a point here where I don't think there can be any going back. I don't think that there can be a natural escape, that the reviews, the various, and we have to wait to see what the reviews throw up, of course. Mm. But even
in terms of the makeup of the board and what's developed in recent days, in terms of, you look at somebody like the treasurer, Eddie Murray, and his performance yesterday, but also being kept in the dark on key issues around the FAI over the recent years. Like, on a personal level, there's people on that board who are going to be severely upset with how they have been portrayed publicly.
How could you not be? You know, how could you not be? I mean, the striking thing about yesterday for me, and why I thought it ended badly for the FAI, is that board members were put in a position where they had to speak like this. Mm. I didn't know. I wasn't aware. And they were in the spotlight. I mean, there were people present who could have answered some of those questions, you would think, or certainly would be in a better position than people who didn't know the answers, who didn't know about the loan to provide those
legal
answers.
Legal advice said that they should not answer such
should
questions.
Should not do so. Yeah, and that was, as I said, that's the advice that they received. But that advice probably didn't help other people that were there, and didn't help the position they were put in. And we were chatting briefly off air about how do you think, you know, the FAI felt about it afterwards. And I mean, I don't know. I can't put myself into their shoes. You know, ironically, a couple of us went across to the Boswells Hotel to work and to finish our work afterwards. And it felt like every time I walked around the corner, I met someone from the FAI who was walking around on the phone. So you know, I mean, John Delaney, Donald Conway, and other members of the FAI delegation were there. I mean, it's the doll. A lot of people go to Boswells Hotel afterwards. There's nothing unusual about that.
Friendly smile. Good to see you, Dan.
No. I think maybe at one point...
What are the chances?
At one point, he might have walked in on the phone, and I'm not sure if he saw a couple of us, but he walked out to continue that whatever discussion he was on, and other people were there. So, I mean, they weren't throwing a party. Do you know what I mean? Like, there wasn't a demeanour of, well, you know, that one's out of the way. There was people walking around making various phone calls, aware, I think, that this was going to continue.
The Sport Ireland's angle from this then, and the stopping of funding for the FAI, you say like August is the next time money is due?
The next tranche of funding.
The FAI were sort of, I thought, keen to point out that, well, listen, we get a lot of money from UEFA. Internally in the FAI, like, how big an issue is that? Is it more an embarrassment situation that it's got to this, that Sport Ireland have publicly criticised us in the strongest possible terms by stopping funding? Like, does it have any bearing until August to the running of the FAI not having this funding?
I don't know, because that involves like speculating on the FAI's cash flow scenario, you know, and how that plays out. I mean, you can't really do that, I suppose. But we do know that at the end of every year, depending on how the year goes, and I think that's been acknowledged, whether games go well or qualification goes well or whatever it might be, then, you know, that will affect the cash flow. There's a volatility there that naturally comes with a sports organisation, and it's a fair point when that point is made. So the margins are fairly tight enough, and I mean, the FAI do sort of honour funding, you know, that comes from Sport Ireland, maybe, you know, add to it, match it, or whatever it might be in certain circumstances. But if they're not having that funding to start with, then there's a couple of million quid, and initially it's a smaller amount, it's half of this year, but a couple of million quid from next year that goes into projects and stuff that they either don't do them or find the money from somewhere else. So there's no positive spin on that for me. I know that UEFA are their main, in terms of being a, you know, in any way being a going concern, or, you know, yeah, like, you know, sort of a red light flashing stage. Yeah, I mean, they do have funds coming in from UEFA, and even coming into 2020, I know they're reselling tickets again with a slightly better pricing structure this time around and stuff, and naming rights and various things. But I mean, look, at the same time though, like, front loading payments for sponsorship deals is grand, like, but that creates problems down the line. So they'll get through, but it doesn't mean they're healthy. There's a big difference between the two.
Football on Off the Ball,
brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Welcome back. So we've been meaning to get to German football for quite a while. The German clubs obviously conspicuous by their absence in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, both knocked out by Premier League opposition. But a huge result in the Bundesliga last weekend. Bayern Munich moving to the top of the Bundesliga with a 5-0 win over Borussia Dortmund. German football commentator Rob Daly is on the line. Evening, Rob.
Evening.
So everything rosy in the garden for Bayern Munich until we hear of today's training session, which ends with Robert Lewandowski and Kingsley Coman smashing the heads off each other.
Yeah, that's what the German tabloids have been saying this afternoon, a clash between Lewandowski and Kingsley Coman in training. It wouldn't be the first time that Lewandowski's been accused of getting involved in a training ground altercation. Something similar reportedly happened with Mats Hummels, I think, at the back end of last season. Regardless at this stage, the extent to which how bad that fight was, it's just an unnecessary distraction for Bayern, because all in all, it's been a fantastic week for them after the 5-0 win over Borussia Dortmund at the weekend. And look, I'm sure they'll get over it. Apparently, Niko Kovac, after the altercation between Coman and Lewandowski, let them continue in the training session. That was what built the German tabloid is reporting. Sometimes these things happen. Maybe just because a journalist catches it in their eye, they think it's a big deal, but you never know.
And the PR drive afterwards is always interesting, in that I guess in some ways it shows how passionate the players are for the club, is quite often how you spin it. But it does seem like it was quite a serious fight. Like, they landed a couple of punches on each other.
Yeah, apparently so. I mean, there's been a bit of discontent lingering around Lewandowski anyway, going back to last season, where it was reported he wanted to leave at the back end of the campaign because he wasn't happy with the transfer policy. The club hadn't spent more than £35 million on any player in their history, and he felt they were sort of lagging behind the big boys, in particular in the Premier League. They're doing that now. They are spending, you know, 50, 60, 70 million on players for next season. But it does seem like it was a bit of a nasty one, if the reports are true, between Coman and Lewandowski. Coman's a very young player, of course, only 22 years of age. But I'm sure that they'll work through it. Niko Kovac didn't seem to think it was a particularly big deal. I mean, you know, we wonder what's going to happen with Lewandowski anyway at the end of the season. Are Bayern going to try and cash in while he still has his pretty good value? It remains to be seen.
His goal-scoring record in German football is unrivaled in recent times. But there's always been sort of question marks around his attitude, it seems. Didi Hamann was quite vocal ahead of the Champions League game against Liverpool in his criticism of Lewandowski, that he wasn't a team player, that he was too selfish, that it was all about him. And he was pretty quickly smacked down, I think, by most of the hierarchy around Bayern Munich. But what's your sense from covering German football of Lewandowski as a personality?
I think Lewandowski is a team player, absolutely. I mean, when the game's going on, I don't see anything other than a selfish, good striker streak in him. And look, he delivers 30, 40 goals a year. Apparently, Mats Hummels, who was with him at Dortmund, of course, wasn't happy with his attitude at the back end of last season. I think Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, part of the hierarchy at Bayern, also said, you know, this kind of behaviour won't be tolerated. We need people who are fully committed to the cause. Ultimately, though, even with him in attack, they've fallen short in the Champions League. And that has been the real level they've been testing themselves at. They won the Champions League last when Lewandowski was playing them in the final in Dortmund colours. So I think he is a team player. Hamann got butchered for that comment on Lewandowski. I thought, really, unnecessarily, it was just his opinion. Mm. But yeah, I think that there are mixed opinions about whether he's a team player in Germany, for sure.
So this is his fifth season at Bayern Munich. He's consistently scored goals and he's 30 now. So that decision in the summer as to whether Bayern sell and realise his value, he's been one of these players consistently linked with the biggest clubs in Europe, whether it was Real Madrid, Chelsea, Manchester City. At 30, has his chance gone for a move to one of those teams?
That is a good question. I mean, thinking out loud in the Premier League, who's Man United are buying, wouldn't they? I mean, look at Champions League. I mean, he still is the top scorer in the Champions League right now, even though Bayern have been eliminated.
Knocked out, yeah.
I think there would be clubs in for him. The Premier League money is so silly at the moment. I think, you know, you could see him in a Manchester United shirt. Real Madrid was always the big one. I mean, when you score four goals against a team in a Champions League semi-final in one game, you're going to be linked with them to the bitter end. And Lewandowski was linked with Real Madrid. But I don't know if that ship has sailed, whether they'll be turning their attention to Neymar or Mbappe or someone a bit younger than that.
So a bit of a sour end to what on the pitch was a stunning week for Bayern Munich with that 5-0 win over Borussia Dortmund, 4-0 up at half-time, just an absolute blitzkrieg in the first 40 minutes or so. Like, it was sensational football, the likes of which we haven't really seen from Bayern so far this season. And of course, it was Borussia Dortmund's former players who did most of the damage. A couple of goals from Lewandowski, one from Mats Hummels. That sort of result, does it... Is everyone a bit shell-shocked by just how good Bayern Munich were?
I think Dortmund... You know, Dortmund got beat at Bayern, I want to say last season maybe, or maybe the season before, like 6-0. I think it was last season, something like 6-0. And that was really embarrassing, for obvious reasons. This feels worse, because it was all about these two teams are like neck and neck in the title race. They're the same calibre now. Dortmund... these vibrant young players, but Bayern still have all that wisdom of Müller and Hummels and Lewandowski and the like, and they just got completely done. I mean, Dortmund did have a chance early in the game, Mahmoud Dahoud hitting the post inside the opening 9 minutes. If he scores that, maybe the game's different. But it was a complete collapse, a complete first-half collapse from Dortmund. They gifted goals to Bayern. Dan Axel-Sagadu at centre-back had an absolute nightmare. The poor guy gifted Lewandowski his... a 200th goal in the Bundesliga for Bayern, which he took brilliantly. He scored two in the end, Lewandowski. And it was just, you know, you heard the comments from Marco Reus and everyone after. They were shocked. They'd been stunned by what happened at the Allianz.
There's still six games to go, so it's not done. They are only a point behind Bayern Munich, and they're back in action at home against Mainz on Saturday. So maybe you go, you win that game, and you put this in the rearview mirror, and... they hope that Bayern slip up. But would you have Bayern, even though it is just a single point, do you think that the mental damage inflicted might be just too much for Dortmund to come back from?
Yeah, I wonder. I do wonder. I mean, look, Bayern, neither of these teams are in Europe anymore. Bayern do have a cup semi-final coming up against Werder Bremen, but basically it's matches every 7 days. So they'll be fresh as daisies, these two. But looking at the run-in, I'll just read the fixtures out very quickly. So Dortmund have Mainz, Freiburg, a home game with Schalke, their big rivals who have been awful this season. Bremen, Fortuna Düsseldorf, really good run, but then they're away at Borussia Mönchengladbach on the final day. Really tough match. Bayern have got a relatively kind run in, apart from the fact in their last two, they go to Leipzig, who we've seen in the Champions League, of course, in recent times, and then they host Frankfurt, who are in the quarterfinals of the Europa League, been fantastic this season. So it's really close. I'd probably just say from a experience, psychological level, Bayern are just going to be absolute animals and just get it done. The problem was for me a little bit that Dortmund, I always said Dortmund would win it if Marco Reus didn't get injured at any point in the season, and he did, you know, and he's so important for them more than any other player, even more than Jadon Sancho, has been fantastic this season.
So Jadon Sancho's obviously been strongly linked with a move back to England. A player who left England to go back to Germany is Serge Gnabry, who I'm sure some people remember, played a few games for Arsenal, at one stage looked as though he might be able to establish himself in the first team, never really happened, and then moved back to Germany at Werder Bremen. He's still very, very young, Serge Gnabry. He's only 23. Is there a surprise how well he's done this season at Bayern Munich?
I think some fans were a bit disappointed he didn't come into the team sooner. I think I'm surprised he's so important already for Bayern, because he went back to Germany. He had a year at Werder Bremen. Bayern signed him, loaned him out to Hoffenheim so he could get another year. So he's almost been a Bayern player for 2 years prior to getting a kick. But he has been fantastic. I mean, thinking back to, I think it was the Olympics in 2016. That was Rio, wasn't it? Rio?
Yeah. They won the silver medal. Brilliant.
That's right. And he was fantastic at that tournament. Second top scorer or something like that. And then I think his agent came out, someone came out and said, all 18 Bundesliga teams are trying to sign him. So everyone knew he was a top quality player. It's weird it didn't happen for him in England. He had his injuries, struggled at West Brom, but he was very young. He is undoubtedly a Champions League top level player. I think if I think back to the Liverpool game at Anfield, for me, Serge Gnabry was Bayern's best player by a long way in that 0-0 draw. He was, every time he got the ball, you were like, wow, he's going to do something. He's going to be the guy to do something. So, and they need wingers. You know, Nathan, they need wingers, because Ribéry and Robin are leaving at the end of the season. So they need Gnabry, they need Coman, and Alphonso Davies, who they got from MLS, to really step up ahead of next season.
Where are Ribéry and Robin expected to go to?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they've hinted at... I think Robin says he's going to continue playing. I'm not sure about Ribéry.
Right.
It's a bit. It's a tough one. I mean, maybe they're still brilliant. I mean, they're just... you know, their legs just can't do absolute top-level week-in, week-out football. And they are a bit injury-prone. So if you're willing to take a gamble on a 20-game-a-season guy who might win you five matches, you know, they're your guys, Ribéry and Robin.
You mentioned Jadon Sancho. What's the latest? So he's very much, it seems, part of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's transfer targets for the summer. If United go in with a bid of 100 million, I guess that's irresistible for Dortmund?
I don't know. I think they'll sit that out, actually, Nathan. I think they would. I think they'd go, look, everyone knows he's brilliant, and he is brilliant. He is like Hazard or Messi when he's running with the ball, and what is so brilliant about him. And it's the difference between, you know, when we all got excited about Aaron Lennon coming through and maybe even Walcott and all these wingers for England that were coming through at 19, 20, and you're thinking, wow, look at them, look at their pace. The end product wasn't there. That final ball, even into their mid-20s, was lacking. Sancho plays it perfectly. I mean, his cutbacks, the weight of the pass, his understanding of the movement of Marco Reus and the players around him is brilliant. I think Dortmund... If I'm Sancho, for starters, I'm staying. Play a full season, play every game for Dortmund, definitely go to the Euros with England. If you're Dortmund, I think you think, well, he's going to have another brilliant year, we're going to be back in the Champions League, and he'll have a Euros, he'll probably star for England at the Euros. Mm. We'll get 150 for him in 12 months.
What sort of treatment does he get from defenders over there? You think of some of the players in the Premier League, some of the tricky wingers, probably Wilfried Zaha, I know, is considerably older at this stage, who gets kicked up and down the pitch. Like, are they well protected?
Yeah, I don't think Sancho gets too much of a rough time. He's actually almost too good to kick over. I mean, he's so fast and nimble, and you actually at times don't understand how he's got around someone. A low centre of gravity where he can shift the weight of his body and glide through players. It's really brilliant. So, you know, he hasn't made any noises about that. Zaha does get really... I know Zaha complains about it. I think he does get really bad treatment in the Premier League from defenders. And they know he gets agitated about it. But Sancho sort of springs up, you know, a bit like Eden Hazard does, just bounces back up and gets on with it. So, what a player. He's been one of the players of the season in Germany for sure.
Just before we let you go, you were at the new White Hart Lane during the week for Spurs' win against Manchester City. Firstly, were you as blown away as everybody else by the stadium?
Yeah, it is incredible. I mean, it does feel, it's weird to say, but it does feel a bit like White Hart Lane. Maybe it's just because you walk up the high road. I mean, you know all this, mate. You walk up the high road and you've got the smells of like stinking pubs and onions and everything like that. And then you go in and it's just this, it doesn't, because it's, there's all these stalls and beer things and a microbrewery, all this stuff I'm loving, by the way. Can't have it.
Are you not working?
Full time, I'm done. And it's just lovely in there. And it doesn't feel, everything's reasonably priced. It's not naff and inside. It's all just really classily done. The concrete of the stadium is made from the old White Hart Lane that they've recycled and used on the concourse. It's just clever stuff like this. And then the noise in there is insane. The noise, I don't know what they've done. I mean, the Spurs fans are obviously up for it at the moment. First two games, we had Palace and we had City Champions League quarterfinal. They're going to make some noise. But they've done something to the shape of that bowl where... I don't know, are you doing a commentary there soon?
I don't know. I was just looking at the fixtures. I don't think, unless I get there final day of the season, which I'm a bit annoyed about, because you want to get there. It looks spectacular.
Yeah, you can't hear yourself through your headphones, so get the noise-cancelling ones going.
Okay, but right.
It's a real treat. I mean, they have built an absolute spaceship in the middle of Tottenham. I don't know how on earth they did it.
I do always love your little studio for anyone who's watching on our social channels, and with the little organ in the background. It sort of feels like the second you switch off with us that you maybe start some sort of... You've got your own YouTube channel of maybe bad Ed Sheeran covers, like slowed right down to be even more romantic.
No, mate, I'm rubbish at that. I've got a guitar here, which I'm all right, but the keyboard, I'm, oh my God, absolutely abysmal.
I think terrible, the challenge for the next time you're on, Rob, should be to get your own theme tune So you could, as you come on, we'll go to you and you can play your own theme tune. So Pat Nevin is his own theme tune. And every time we come to you, you could have invented your own piece of music.
I know,
so something
but you'll
that you
have
feel
to be
is appropriate.
You'll have to be on the show because it'll be weird if you're not hosting. I just start playing a song about myself.
Well, listen, I think it could work.
I will say Pat's got the best off the ball setup, hasn't he? That sort of fire going in the background and a whiskey.
Yeah, that's,
I love what he's doing.
That's the dream right there for everybody. that's where you're heading, though, Rob. Don't you worry about it. Great stuff as always.
One day. Cheers.
Talk to you soon.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.